Mr. Cutter, Reel 2. So the next thing, really, after this period of just training at Queen Street, was that the 74th moved with the rest of 50th Div down the to Gloucester area. Yes, yes. What was that move like? Did you drive down?
No, I drove down. It was very, very long, slow, terrible move. Because in those days, there was no motorways. We went to a little village called North Leach in Gloucester, just past Burton on the Water and Stow on the Wold. North Leach is on the main London to Bristol Road in between Cheltenham and Witten. It's a nice sailing system.
And where were you billeted in North Leach?
It was an old brew which was actually dropping the bits from it, and we were building in there.
Was it a good billet?
Well, it wasn't very good really, because as I say, it was a very old building, and all the walls and that, nothing solid, so it was nothing secure, so wind and all that was getting in that, when you're young.
What was the weather like? Because it's winter.
After being there, I think we've been down there about 3 weeks or so, and we're having a little bit of a winter there. And every night, we used to have to take our turns, like the fitters and drivers, going out into the field where the guns and the heaters were parked, to start them up and keep them in case they froze up and that, check them over every so many hours and that,
Were they prone to freezing up like that, the vehicles then?
Well, not really, because they had the antifreeze. But in any case, just to make sure, in case we got the nod for the go, the minister was, we used to go out every 2 hours to start the meetings all up and keep them all in one condition.
What other duties did you have while you were down there?
Well, that's the only duties I had. Already maintaining, keeping the vehicles clean and tidy.
So that's where you started some semblance of a maintenance programme. Was it laid down then, what you had to do, or did that come later?
No, there was nothing laid down really. You just did it on your own initiative, because you had your own vehicle. It was your job, your position to keep it.
Would you personalise your vehicle at all? I mean, they always have these planes with things written on it.
I never did on mine.
Did some of the men?
Well, no, we weren't now.
So your vehicle just...
Make a mess of the vehicle, and you had your number and your regimental number on, troop number on, and that was
all that was allowed. So what sort of a maintenance programme would you have? What did you think was essential to keep your vehicle in order?
Well, as I say, I think we should go around, check all... First of all, go through the engine, check the fan belt, see if there's oil, dip the oil, see if there's plenty of oil in. Check the diff and the gearbox to see if there's oil. You had your tyre gauges to check your tyres, see if your tyres and that was all in order. You just keep starting it up to see that we start more out and see all your plug leads and everything was all pretty secure and just ready for a quick start.
So how often would you do that?
Just once a week.
Was there anything you'd do, say, monthly, bigger jobs?
No, not really.
So that was the basis?
That was the basis.
And you'd have to keep it clean yourself, would you?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes. There was vehicle inspections every so long. I forget the wrong every so long, you have to keep the vehicle.
How clean did they want you to have it? I mean, would they check the inside of your mudguards, that sort of thing, or was it...
Well, no, not really, but they check inside the cab and inside the rear where they were finishing that used to sit in that
So what other things were you doing? Were you driving the guns about much, or...?
No, not really. They were mostly just in a stationary position in the town. And, of course, every Sunday there, we used to have the church field at the North Beach. In the church there at Northridge.
How did you get on with the locals?
Well, we got them very badly, actually. We were the first troops into the village. There's only very little. There's only one, actually, the one main route through the village. I think I had a little bit difficulty understanding it at first, you know, but if it was sports slow, we could understand it. The same as we had with understanding them, because their dialect was very slow. You know, but we've gotten very well, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. How long were you there for?
Oh, no. I think it was about 2 months, I think. It was just after Christmas, so when we were...
So it was about January 40.
Yes.
And that's when you went... That's when you... Did you get any embarkation leave before you went?
Yes. I had a week's embarkation leave. Back to the regiment. Back to France.
What did your parents think about you joining up and going off?
Well, I mean, naturally, especially my mum, I mean, she was worried. My sisters couldn't understand that they were... I was only 19, and my sisters one was only 9. And the other was only about 6, so they couldn't understand it all, you know. And at the time, I didn't see him go, because he'd went to sea then. He was going to sea as an engineer.
What about your dad?
Well, he was understanding. I mean, being an old soldier, like, you know, just gives you look after yourself and don't do this and don't do that and behave and accept and all that, you know. Don't make a fool of yourself, etc. And that's what I did.
So, you went, when you got back, what happened then in January?
I just can't remember where I went from the France. When did the show go? I can't remember what port.
What do you remember about the crossing? Had you got your guns and your vehicles with you?
Oh, yes.
Still the Morris and still the 4.5s?
Yes. We were from the docks in London, off the Thames, but I just can't remember the name of the boat.
What was the crossing like?
Oh, well, the crossing actually wasn't too bad. It's that particular tiny menu. And went from there and we stayed at a place called Douvrin, D-O-V-I-E-N, and it was Douvrin. We sat on just off the La Bassi Canal. We stayed there for a little while before we started making the push.
What were your first impressions of France at Cherbourg and then on at Douvrin?
Actually, it was a country I was never stood on, really. Because the area where you're bombed, there was a plateau. You had to be very, very careful. If you went off the road, you were bogged down. In fact, even if you park your vehicle, you had to be careful. You went back the next morning, that was that happened something to the ground, you know, because we all the drainage. There's a lot of the drainage just went onto the land in France. And if you disturbed it, you should start to smell.
What about the French? What do you think of them?
I never thought much of the French either.
Why not?
Well, when the war started, actually, they were supposed to have had a bigger army than the Germans. And when the first started to make the push there, King Leopold of Belgium, he wouldn't take war. So at the finish we went actually through Belgium into Liège, which is a town just outside of Brussels.
Right, I'll take it through from there. So you went to Douvrin first. And what were your billets?
Before the campaign started.
And what were your billets like there?
It's just a you know, you just slept on the floor, what they call the biscuit. It's called the biscuits, you know, the horse hair things lying on, Douvrin.
And what were you doing at Douvrin?
The guns were just patching and good practicing and we were just doing all the maintenance on the vehicle.
Were you taking them out and dropping them into action and things, or
no,
was it just...
No.
And how long were you there for?
couple of months. So just before the dug started in here.
Would you dig in at all? Or
No, we weren't digging there.
So you wouldn't bother to have dug?
Oh, no.
Now you'd gone over in January, so there's quite a while before May. Was that all spent at Dufferin, or did you?
Yes, most of the other time.
Nothing you remember particularly about it, though?
No, not really. Just the base and where we were stationed, that was it.
So what happened when the campaign opened?
Well, I see when the campaign went into action and that, and of course, as I see Belgium then was declared that beat a nuclear company. And of course, we were expecting the French to come and support us, right, which we never got. And we went to that little town called the Age, which is just outside of Brussels.
That's the fortress town, or the old fortress
the
town?
Yes, L-E-I-G. And a vivid memory, which I'll never forget, was the first dead person I ever saw in the war was there, because it was a car and there'd been a Stuka here. And they were lying half out of the car, you know. And of course, we all looked like the weirdest thing, like, you know, and that was our blood. That in years. In actual fact, if I remember, I think 50 years, the 150 Brigade was about the only brigade that ever advanced in France.
At Arras, yeah.
Yes.
But what do you remember about what that happened to you? What was the first? You went to Liège.
Yeah.
And did you come under fire before then?
Not really, no.
What happened at Liège then?
Well, we came under fire in Liège with the tanks and of course, we were drawn back.
What? Where did you set up your positions at Liège? Do you actually dropped in gun pits and things? Or?
No, just standing with me. No, never got to win.
But what happened? Why did you? Do you see what I mean? Can you take us through what happened?
Well, because we had to withdraw because we were outnumbered and outweighed. And on top of that, he was more mobile with us with these tanks.
So what did you see happening at Liège?
Well, there was a Stuka raid, which come regular.
They came on you, did they?
In the town, they were trying to get to us. And, of course, there was these tanks. Tanks which opened up on us, and these artillery. And, of course, we had to keep withdrawing all the time. To finish, we put the rear guard on the Bassy Bridge.
So the first bit's a bit blurred. You don't actually remember any particular event.
No,
what was it like the first time you were under fire? Do you remember that? Where was that at?
Well, that would be there, but in the Age, not yourself.
What do you remember of it?
It was a bit nerve wracking at first, because you didn't. In fact, actually, when we saw green, you weren't taking cover or weren't bothering to look after yourself, you know, because you didn't understand. You know, you've been trained at gunnery and drive and dropping guns off, but in drill, but when you went into action, it's a different thing altogether, you see. Because it was the first time you just didn't exactly realise what was happening. But, let me say, it didn't take you long to learn.
What was the first type of fire you faced? Was it a Stukas or was it?
Stukas, a bomb.
What was a Stuka raid like? Could you remember?
Well, they would know about them because when you dive down, when you had the screaming bombs, which tried to break your morale and that, you see, but of course, at the finish, you got used to it, you see. And mine, they took gap with it, one of these fellas.
Did they get any hits on the battery or on the troop?
No, not one. No.
So the raids weren't actually on to you?
No, just anywhere in the front, anywhere on the...
Did the noise work, the scream at first?
Well, it didn't work with us with the soldiers, but it worked with the population, because the population could go around screaming mad, but it didn't work with us much.
What about the tanks fire and artillery?
Until the Mark III, you had the 37 millimeter gun on, which was far superior to our guns.
Did they hit the battery at all?
No.
So it was more that the area was coming under fire and forced to retreat. Did you open fire much yourselves on anything, the 4.5? You would know as a driver.
Exactly, when they register any hits or not, you see, they wouldn't know as a driver.
When did you first start digging in? I mean, would you learn? Not even a slit trench.
There wasn't even the time. His advance was so fast.
So you were just falling back?
Falling back, and just fights dropping into action. A few rear guard actions, you know. Start again.
So the battery was sort of in action and firing, but so far hadn't come under much fire itself.
That's right, yeah.
But it was being forced back by the situation.
By the situation, that's right. The firepower that he had and the numbers he had, you see, of course, his tanks were much superior to ours. And it wouldn't just have been.
But it was the whole army, not your battery, that was being hammered at that
army,
time.
The whole army, the whole British army, the whole BF, the same situation.
So you were falling back, and then you fought this rearguard action at...
Labassie Canal.
Was it near where you'd stayed before, or...?
Not far from there, actually. It was down Lille. It was called Lille. Arras. Actually, it was on the old, more or less on the old battlefields of the First World War.
And what was the situation where you dropped in? Can you set the scene for us?
Well, just the same there. We came over the Labassie Canal and we tried to protect the bridge, keep the bridge open, you know, until the infantry got back to the line to see them leaving the road. But the bridge and that got hit, of course. Things was getting a bit too hot for us, and you know, so we just kept on withdrawing and withdrawing all the time.
So again, the battery didn't actually get caught by any.
It was shelled, but there wasn't any.
No hits at that
point. No really severe casualties anymore.
Had they had any casualties amongst your subsection?
No, at the time, no.
So you're falling back still.
Yes.
Were the roads crowded with refugees?
The roads were absolutely solid. We couldn't move. Couldn't move at all.
Now, how did you cope with that as a driver?
Well, you just get through hooting and took them going the road, but nobody took the road. The roads were brilliant. They had the horses and carts. And of course, you couldn't pass these people because you were on roads, and either side of the road was more or less a canal, which meant. There was no way of passing the riding in the northern canal. He was just a sitting target for the scooters, but also a sitting target for the messages coming down the machine gun. You see, because they were after the civilians, they were after the military, which was on the savages.
Did you try and force your way through at all, or?
Well, we tried it, but it was the numbers were so vast, you just. You just couldn't go in, you had to just go, the more you just go in with the crowd.
When you were on these roads, did you ever get attacked by Stukas or Messerschmitts?
Oh, yes, machine gun down. Messerschmitts coming down machine gun, yes, it was bombing, you know. Yes.
What would you do?
Well, all you do is just stop and just took one of the truck, but just lie down on the side of the dike, and that just hoping for the best that you weren't going to get hit. But luckily, we never got hit anyway.
So they missed your.
The job you had, you know. So there you had to be spot on because the roads, as I say, was just little narrow roads and all banked up and doing the canals either side. As I say, if you made a mistake, you went in, you were sleeping the water and the canals.
Were you getting supplies all right, food supplies and such?
Well, they weren't too bad, but you see, you had vehicles following you on the echelon vehicles, you know, with the quartermaster sergeant. I suppose you didn't think much about brother eating, all you were worried about was keeping yourself alive. That was the main thing.
So you were falling back again from Labassé, the canal.
Yeah.
Where did you go back to then?
Well, we started to meet all the way back from then to back in Dunkirk, because there was word getting about that the whole army was more or less in retreat, and that the French people had just surrendered and were just on our own, so that was a general order for making way back to Dunkirk. That's just exactly what happened.
Was there any incidents or stories you can tell it? Let us know what the retreat was like.
I suppose it was a bit of a nightmare because there was that much traffic that on the road, and the nearer you got to Dunkirk, the further you had to stop, because you couldn't get through to Dunkirk. You see, you had Dunkirk, and of course, the further you got back was all these little people who'd been in front of you. They'd left all their equipment. Pre-pass they were in front of you, and they'd left all their vehicles and that, you see. So therefore, when each regiment was coming in, they were getting further away from the place, and the amount of vehicles and guns and lorries all stacked and stacked and stacked and piled up all the way back. You had to leave finding the order. I remember there was a sergeant coming over, I remember his name, Bob Peacock. He'd be dead now. He'd come around, he'd beaten the First World War. He'd come around, he'd say, right, get your vehicles out here then, cut them with petrol, set fire and blow them up. Because you're all good, because we just realised then what was actually happening to us, which we did. We were smashing the vehicles, we were smashing engines, doing as much damage as we could, slinging petrol and set them on fire.
Had you pulled them in the side of the road, or?
We'd just park them anywhere, because there was nowhere to park. So see all the vehicles.
The road was just full of vehicles.
Vehicles, streets everywhere. Nowhere to find.
How close into Dunkirk had you got then? Or were you in the outskirts, or whereabouts were you?
We were about 3/4 of a mile away, just on the outskirts of Dunkirk.
And all the streets were blocked?
Absolutely chock and blocked. Vehicles, moving equipment.
So you set fire to?
Smashed them as best as you could.
What about the guns, though, and the Limbers?
The guns smashed all those as well. And if they had the chance of what they call spiking.
Which is,
you turn a shell, put the shell in from the muzzle end, stick it in, put the shell in the normal proper way and fire it. And it blows the gun up, spike it. But of course, 9 out of 10, they hadn't even time to do that. They just smashed the sight and did as much
There was no way of getting the guns through and getting the guns.
Absolutely impossible. The only way to get through was walk. And then, even then, you were squeezing. So it was just like being in a garage from heat and cast. Absolutely chock and block. Vehicles, guns, motorbike, you mentioned equipment.
All abandoned.
All abandoned. All making the move.
Do you know the date you abandoned your guns?
June the 1st. Around about that day, June the 1st when we abandoned the guns.
Was under orders you abandoned the guns?
The whole army was under orders to withdraw. Leave the vehicles, that was the order.
Now, were you officers and your NCOs still with you at this stage?
Oh, yes.
All of them?
Majority of them were, yeah.
Where the other ones gone? You said the majority were with you.
Well, you were all spread out. You see, you lost contact. You just found anywhere where to park. You actually, what you were trying to do was get as near to Dunkirk as you could, find somewhere to dump your equipment and vehicle, smash it up, burn it, and then walk or march into the
road. So who was with you when you left your vehicle?
Well, it was a good crew. One of the officers, just abandoned all the equipment, just made our way to Dunkirk.
So just about 10 of you, a subsection, a few officers. What did you see as you walked through the town?
Well, actually, Dunkirk, you couldn't, the town itself, you couldn't see because it was all up in smoke. But even the stupid, bombed it, all the oil tanks and that there, it was just a massive black smoke and cloud and flames going on all the time. And of course, from there, we just made our way up the beach.
Was there any signs of panic?
Well, not that I remember. I'd definitely say there was no signs of panic. Not on our part, anyway. You know, as I say, you see, we'd just been blooded into all this, you know, and we were so green, we just couldn't take it all in. It was exactly what was really happening, you know.
So you didn't realise how bad the situation was?
Exactly.
What did you think was happening? I mean, did you think anything at all? Or?
Well, we just thought we just came back to the court and just start up just to start again, you know. But we just didn't understand the situation. There was nobody giving us any specific orders. That's all we were given.
How far behind you do you think the Germans were, behind your lot? Or was there still a fair layer of infantry and such between you?
Oh, a mile and a half.
Were there infantry behind you or between you?
Well, some of them had come through our lines, and they were on the beach before us. But there was one or two pockets there, like putting up rear guard actions, you know, and a bit of resistance.
From the infantry?
Yes.
So, what could you see when you got on the beach?
Well, actually, when we got on the beach, that's all we saw, just men. Uniforms, men, and sand. And the whole boat on the front, the harbour, all actually black, jet black smoke, because we'd been away from the oil tanks and that.
And what were the men doing on the beach? Was there any purposefulness about it?
There was nothing about the drill. That's when they started to dig a few little bits of slip trenches, so just for a little bit of cool.
On the beach?
On the beach. But it was so crowded, there was hardly any room, hardly any space left for to dig us with.
Where were you in relation to Dunkirk, to the harbour and everything else?
Well, actually in Dunkirk itself, on Dunkirk Beach itself, in the town itself of Dunkirk.
But how far from the harbour and the rest? Which side of the harbour?
Well, if I remember right, the village, Dunkirk was an out. Facing down to sea, the bridge was on our left and the tanks of beer was over on our right. It's only a matter of hundreds of yards, that's all, not any great distance.
What about any shipping or little boats or anything else out to sea? Was there any sign of this?
Well, there was nothing like that then, at that particular time, until we'd been on there about a day. And then there was all the boats.
So what was happening the first? I'll come back. What was happening the first day then, as you sat?
Well, there was a commander there. I forget his name now. A naval commander took over.
On the beach.
On the beach, and trying to get some a little bit of uniform, a little bit of organisation. You know, getting people organised into different squads and regiments. You know, just told all we can do is sit and wait and keep calm, sort of thing. As easy as that.
So he was trying to organise you up. Was he having any success?
Oh, yes. Really. Well, he was doing this thing more or less the two of them. Unless, of course, there was an air he'd come on, and then we just flopped down like the road, actually. Because, you see, funny enough, the bombs that came into the sand, they didn't do any damage because we'd been buried in the sand. You know, hadn't been a solid top of the hit, you see, there would have been a hell of a lot of casualties and lives lost. You see, the war is burying themselves in the sand.
So you'd just be in your slit trenches during that?
That's all we're just doing, yes. Just
was anything else happening that first day on the beach?
Not
were any of the troops being got off by destroyers or anything from the harbour or anything?
At that particular time, no.
So you were all just waiting
just
on the...
Just standing waiting for the... Hoping, living in hope and praying. That's going to happen.
But no panic?
But no panic. Even then, you see, we didn't realise that there was boats going to come in to take us off. Until they started coming on the little boats. You know, that,